Chapter 5. At Anglebury Station. I am very sorry I misled him, apostrophe said Springrove.
Oh, I am not alarmed at all, apostrophe replied Cytherea.
Well, it's sure to be all right. He will sleep there, and come by the first in the morning.
But what will you do, alone?
Apostrophe, I am quite easy on that point. The landlady is very friendly.
I must go indoors now.
Good night, Mr. Springrove.
Apostrophe, let me go round to your door with you?
Apostrophe, he pleaded.
No, thank you. We live close by.
Apostrophe, he looked at her as a waiter looks at the change he brings back.
But she was inexorable.
Don't forget me, apostrophe, he murmured.
She did not answer.
Let me see you sometimes, apostrophe, he said.
Perhaps you never will again. I am going away, apostrophe,
she replied in lingering tones, and turning into Cross Street, ran indoors and upstairs. The sudden withdrawal of what was superfluous at first is often felt as an essential loss. It was felt now with regard to the maiden. More too, after a meeting so pleasant and so enkindling, as he had seemed to imply, that they would never come together again. The young man softly followed her, stood opposite the house, and watched her come into the upper room with the light. Presently his gaze was cut short by her approaching the window and pulling down the blind. Edward, dwelling upon her vanishing figure with a hopeless sense of loss akin to that which Adam is said by logicians to have felt when he first saw the sunset, and thought, in his inexperience, that it would return no more. He waited till her shadow had twice crossed the window, when, finding the charming outline was not to be expected again, he left the street, crossed the harbor bridge, and entered his own solitary chamber on the other side, vaguely thinking as he went, for undefined reasons, one hope is too like despair for prudence to smother. Apostrophe, 3. The events of 8 days, 1. From the 22nd to the 27th of July, but things are not what they seem. A responsive love for Edward Springrove had made its appearance in Cytherea's bosom with all the fascinating attributes of a first experience, not succeeding to or displacing other emotions, as in older hearts, but taking up entirely new ground. As when gazing just after sunset at the pale blue sky we see a star come into existence where nothing was before. His parting words, don't forget me, apostrophe she repeated to herself 100 times, and though she thought their import was probably commonplace, she could not help toying with them, looking at them from all points, and investing them with meanings of love and faithfulness, ostensibly entertaining such meanings only as fables wherewith to pass the time, yet in her heart admitting, for detached instants, a possibility of their deeper truth. And thus, for hours after he had left her, her reason flirted with her fancy as a kitten will sport with a dove, pleasantly and smoothly through easy attitudes, but disclosing its cruel and unyielding nature at crises. To turn now to the more material media through which this story moves, it so happened that the very next morning brought round a circumstance which, slight in itself, took up a relevant and important position between the past and the future of the persons herein concerned. At breakfast time, just as Cytherea had again seen the postman pass without bringing her an answer to the advertisement, as he had fully expected he would do, Owen entered the room.
Well, apostrophe he said, kissing her, you have not been alarmed, of course.
Springrove told you what I had done, and you found there was no train?
Apostrophe, yes, it was all clear.
But what is the lameness owing to?
Apostrophe, I don't know nothing. It has quite gone off now.
Cytherea, I hope you like Springrove.
Springrove's a nice fellow, you know.
Apostrophe, yes.
I think he is, except that apostrophe, it happened just to the purpose that I should meet him there, didn't it?
And when I reached the station and learned that I could not get on by train, my foot seemed better. I started off to walk home, and went about 5 miles along a path beside the railway.
It then struck me that I might not be fit for anything today if I walked and aggravated the bothering foot, so I looked for a place to sleep at. There was no available villager inn, and I eventually got the keeper of a gatehouse, where a lane crossed the line, to take me in. They proceeded with their breakfast. Owen yawned. You didn't get much sleep at the gatehouse last night, I'm afraid, Owen, said his sister. To tell the truth, I didn't. I was in such very close and narrow quarters. Those gatehouses are such small places, and the man had only his own bed to offer me. Ah, by the by, Sithy, I have such an extraordinary thing to tell you in connection with this man. By Jove, I had nearly forgotten it. But I'll go straight on. As I was saying, he had only his own bed to offer me, but I could not afford to be fastidious, and as he had a hearty manner, though a very queer one, I agreed to accept it, and he made a rough pallet for himself on the floor close beside me. Well, I could not sleep for my life, and I wished I had not stayed there, though I was so tired. For one thing, there were the luggage trains rattling by at my elbow the early part of the night. But worse than this, he talked continually in his sleep, and occasionally struck out with his limbs at something or another, knocking against the post of the bedstead and making it tremble. My condition was altogether so unsatisfactory, that at last I awoke him, and asked him what he had been dreaming about for the previous hour, for I could get no sleep at all. He begged my pardon for disturbing me, but a name I had casually let fall that evening had led him to think of another stranger he had once had visit him, who had also accidentally mentioned the same name, and some very strange incidents connected with that meeting. The affair had occurred years and years ago, but what I had said had made him think and dream about it, as if it were but yesterday. What was the word? I said. Etheria, he said. What was the story? I asked then. He then told me that, when he was a young man in London, he borrowed a few pounds, to add to a few he had saved up, and opened a little inn at Hammersmith. One evening, after the inn had been open about a couple of months, every idler in the neighborhood ran off to Westminster. The Houses of Parliament were on fire. Not a soul remained in his parlor besides himself, and he began picking up the pipes and glasses his customers had hastily relinquished. At length a young lady about 17 or 18 came in. She asked if a woman was there waiting for herself, Miss Jane Taylor. He said no, asked the young lady if she would wait, and showed her into the small inner room. There was a glass pane in the partition dividing this room from the bar, to enable the landlord to see if his visitors, who sat there, wanted anything. A curious awkwardness and melancholy about the behavior of the girl who called, caused my informant to look frequently at her through the partition. She seemed weary of her life, and sat with her face buried in her hands, evidently quite out of her element in such a house. Then a woman much older came in, and greeted Miss Taylor by name. The man distinctly heard the following words pass between them. Why have you not brought him? He is ill, he is not likely to live through the night. At this announcement from the elderly woman, the young lady fell to the floor in a swoon, apparently overcome by the news. The landlord ran in, and lifted her up. Well, do what they would, they could not for a long time bring her back to consciousness, and began to be much alarmed. Oh, is she? The innkeeper said to the other woman. I know her, the other said, with deep meaning in her tone. The elderly and young woman seemed allied, and yet strangers. She now showed signs of life, and it struck him he was plainly of an inquisitive turn, that in her half-bewildered state he might get some information from her. He stooped over her, put his mouth to her ear, and said sharply, What's your name? Oh, catch a woman napping is difficult, even when she's half dead. But I did it, says the gatekeeper. When he asked her her name, she said immediately, Cytheria, and stopped suddenly. My own name. Said Cytheria. Yes, your name. Well, the gateman thought at the time it might be equally with Jane a name as he had invented for the occasion, that they might not trace her. But I think it was truth unconsciously uttered, for she added directly afterwards, comma what have I said, and was quite overcome again this time with fright. Her vexation that the woman now doubted the genuineness of her other name was very much greater than that the innkeeper did, and it is evident that to blind the woman was her main object. He also learnt from words the elderly woman casually dropped that meetings of the same kind had been held before, and that the falseness of the so I dissent Miss Jane Taylor's name had never been suspected by this dependent or confederate till then. She recovered, rested there for an hour, and first sending off her companion peremptorily, which was another odd thing, she left the house, offering the landlord all the money as he had to say nothing about the circumstance. He has never seen her since, according to his own account. I said to him again and again, did you find any more particulars afterwards? Odd a syllable, he said. Oh, he should never hear any more of that. Too many years had passed since it happened. At any rate, you found out her surname? I said. Well, that's my secret, he went on. Perhaps I should never have been in this part of the world, if it hadn't been for that. I failed as a publican, you know. I imagine the situation of gateman was given him, and his debts paid off as a bribe to silence, but I can't say. H, yes. He said, with a long breath. Have never heard that name mentioned since that time till tonight, and then there instantly rose to my eyes the vision of that young lady lying in a fainting fit. He then stopped talking and fell asleep. Telling the story must have relieved him as it did the ancient mariner, for he did not move a muscle or make another sound for the remainder of the night. Now isn't that an odd story? Apostrophe, it is indeed, apostrophe, Cytherea murmured. Very, very strange. Apostrophe, why should she have said your most uncommon name? Apostrophe, continued Owen. The man was evidently truthful, for there was not motive sufficient for his invention of such a tale, and he could not have done it either. Apostrophe, Cytherea looked long at her brother. Don't you recognize anything else in connection with the story? Apostrophe, she said. What? Apostrophe, he asked. Do you remember what poor Papa once let drop that Cytherea was the name of his first sweetheart in Bloomsbury, who so mysteriously renounced him? A sort of intuition tells me that this was the same woman. Apostrophe, oh no, not likely, apostrophe, said her brother skeptically. How not likely, Owen? There's not another woman of the name in England. And what year used Papa to say the event took place? Apostrophe, 1835. Apostrophe, and when were the Houses of Parliament burnt? Stop, I can tell you. Apostrophe, she searched their little stock of books for a list of dates, and found one in an old school history. The Houses of Parliament were burnt down in the evening of the 16th of October, 1834. Apostrophe, nearly a year and a quarter before she met Father, apostrophe, remarked Owen. They were silent. If Papa had been alive, what a wonderful absorbing interest this story would have had for him, apostrophe, said Cytherea by and by. And how strangely knowledge comes to us. We might have searched for a clue to her secret half the world over, and never found one. If we had really had any motive for trying to discover more of the sad history than Papa told us, we should have gone to Bloomsbury. But not caring to do so, we go 200 miles in the opposite direction, and there find information waiting to be told us. What could have been the secret, Owen? Apostrophe, heaven knows. But our having heard a little more of her in this way, if she is the same woman, is a mere coincidence after all, a family story to tell our friends, if we ever have any. But we shall never know any more of the episode now, trust our fates for that. Apostrophe, Cytherea sat silently thinking. There was no answer this morning to your advertisement, Cytheria? He continued.
None. I could see that by your looks when I came in.
Fancy not getting a single one. She said sadly.
Surely there must be people somewhere who want governesses?
Yes. But those who want them, and can afford to have them, get them mostly by friends' recommendations, whilst those who want them, and can't afford to have them, make use of their poor relations.
What shall I do?
Never mind it. Go on living with me. Don't let the difficulty trouble your mind so. You think about it all day. I can keep you, Sithy, in a plain way of living. 25 shillings a week do not amount to much truly, but then many mechanics have no more, and we live quite as sparingly as journeymen mechanics. It is a meager narrow life we are drifting into, he added gloomily, but it is a degree more tolerable than the worrying sensation of all the world being ashamed of you, which we experienced at Hockbridge.
I couldn't go back there again, she said.
Nor one. Oh, I don't regret our course for a moment. We did quite right in dropping out of the world.
The sneering tones of the remark were almost too labored to be real.
Besides, he continued, something better for me is sure to turn up soon. I wish my engagement here was a permanent one instead of for only 2 months. It may, certainly, be for a longer time, but all is uncertain.
I wish I could get something to do. And I must too,
she said firmly. Suppose, as is very probable, you are not wanted after the beginning of October the time Mr. Gratfield mentioned what should we do if I were dependent on you only throughout the winter?
Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.